Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport. Game Day, Premier League preview show.
Driving home for Christmas, the Premier League foursome have swished their way into the latter stages of the Champions League like the pleats of a sequined party dress. You got yours ready, Nicole?
I do.
Good. For the next 2 months, they can concentrate solely now on the Premier League. Arsenal and Manchester United can start doing some late-night shopping now their Thursday nights are unoccupied for a while, and they have massive games this weekend. Meet the tactical tinkerers who have lit the path to panicking Pep. Watford have got a new boss, and as left-field appointments go, this is hugging the touchline. D-Day for Pellegrini. He has to beat Southampton on Saturday or he'll be driving home for Christmas. Chelsea take on Bournemouth, who have lost five in a row. Sheffield United look to continue their rise against Villa. Leaping Lords Leicester face Norwich. And the Eagles face the Seagulls on Monday Night Football. All 10 games delivered to your ears and a few dream team tips for your perusal. It's the Game Day Preview from TalkSport. And with me, the former Wales captain, Cumbran's favourite son. Is that how you say it, Cumbran?
Not bad.
Not bad. Not bad. Yeah. I say that because you turned on the Christmas lights in your hometown this year, didn't you?
How do you know that?
Very creepy. Very creepy.
Detective Inspector.
You know what I, thought was really interesting was is that that you were the headline act as well, weren't you?
Despite
the presence of X Factor's Sam Bailey.
Wow.
Was he there as well?
She.
No.
I feel honoured.
Is it a he or a she? I don't know.
It's a she.
I don't know either.
So you were, so you're that big time in Cumbran.
It was a big thing for me. It was a big thing.
But you turned up right at the end after all those minor acts had finished.
Yeah, yeah, they've been after me for a while, to be fair.
Have they?
So, yeah.
And they only just got you now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Magic.
Nicole Holliday's here as well. She turned on her own lights for the first time for a little while and come out from under the duvet because Arsenal won a game in a Premier League match for the first time this season by 2 goals.
Oh, I know. It's felt like such a long time. But you know what? It was an awful game. So how can you even be that happy with it?
You know what? I'm glad they won Arsenal because I don't think she would have turned up.
I know.
Not after the activity in the WhatsApp group.
You're not wrong.
Nope.
This weekend, TalkSport's Game Day brings you live football back to back. Liverpool against Watford, Chelsea, Bournemouth and Southampton, West Ham. They're all live on Premier League Live around the world as well. And we will focus on those in just a moment. But first of all, Jolly Ollie is ready to welcome Big Dunk into the deep end.
Back to Martial from James. Squeezes it at the near post, Anthony Martial. And it's 2-0 to Manchester United. And on a day of heavyweight contest, the champs have been hit with an absolute haymaker.
Of course, it affects moods when you get results. But it's still windy and cold out there, as I said. The landscape doesn't change that much. It's on to the next one.
Backheel to Tom Davies. He's got a chance, Davies. He's still got a chance. Calvert-Lewin, 3-1. It rolled into the net. Duncan Ferguson skips down the touchline, punching the air.
Manchester United looking to win 3 consecutive Premier League matches for the first time since winning their first 6 under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer back in January. Now, these are two heroes of the early 2000s leading their clubs out at Old Trafford. Duncan Ferguson did brilliantly in his first game at Goodison Park. But can Everton take that on to Old Trafford, Danny, do you think?
I think it's going to be a difficult one because, as you mentioned there, Sam, United's form in the minute's very good. I think it's 5 unbeaten they are now. Obviously, that statement win last weekend against Man City, which we didn't see coming, I have to say. But
you didn't see it coming.
We'll get to that in a minute.
We'll get to that, yeah. But no, they are outstanding. You know, their home form has been fairly good this season. United just the one home loss. So I'm more intrigued to see what Everton do going away from home. I think, obviously, your first game in charge, Duncan Ferguson, obviously, he rallied the troops. He got them going. They were running. They were fighting. They were tackling. Obviously, they bullied Chelsea and got the win. But can you then go to United and kind of do that, play 4-4-2, try and run around, get after them, press them and do a similar thing? Or will he maybe tactically change things and, you know, maybe sit back a little bit and play on the counter-attack? Because I think the way United are playing at the minute, particularly with that front three, if you go chasing them and harrying them and they play through you, then the front three can be really dangerous and punish you. So.
And the other thing he did brilliantly last week was he utilised the crowd, didn't he? He sucked every ounce of atmosphere at Goodison Park. Obviously, that's not going to be available to him this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, he was absolutely buzzing, wasn't he? And I think, you know, as a neutral fan, it was actually really nice to see. And look, he got everyone behind him and the team looked good. Dominic Calvert-Lewin was very good. He did very well. He was strong and you could see how much scoring meant to him, and he ran over to Big Dunk, and you know, it was quite lovely to see. And I think Everton have needed it massively, because obviously we all know that they're struggling this season, and it was it was great. But this is going to be a very, very tough game, but interesting, because they'll be feeling a bit more confident now, Everton, going into this. But of course Manchester United are off the back of beating Spurs, beating City, two big games. So they're going to be going into this feeling very confident too. So it's going to be an epic game, I think.
Look, United were excellent against Manchester City. Mm. And we need to address this. We need to address the elephant in the room. He's not here, the elephant that's usually in the room, Alex Crook, but he did say this last week.
Manchester United's best form of defence is attack. They've got players in Rashford and Daniel James who can really hurt, to me, what is not a great Manchester City defence. Rashford, as I say, is the big game player. He will turn it on again. McTominay can boss the midfield like he did against Tottenham.
Danny, how do we get out of that?
We're struggling. There's nothing we can do.
There's no spin here, is there?
No.
There's no way we can talk our way out of this.
He is a United fan, though, so I think that's why we thought...
Yeah.
You know, why are you biased towards his
We just thought
team.
He was being over-optimistic, didn't we?
No.
Yeah. Well, we were wrong.
And you
was
were wrong.
We were wrong. We were absolutely wrong.
I said exactly the same on the Friday night Game Day Countdown show. I was saying that I was backing United just because, hear me out, well, I mean, you've seen the result now anyway, but Pep, City, they are under pressure. And because United beat Spurs and because they've had a poor season, I feel like no one was expecting them to beat City. You're not. You kind of had written them off straight away. So they were going into it with advantage.
Two games away from the sack, someone said to him in the press conference going into the Tottenham game. I went to the Tottenham game and I went to the Manchester City match as well. And they said they needed to get 3 points out of these games or at some point, or he needed to get a couple of points out to stop the sack from being impending. And he's won both of them. Yeah. And he's done it with great counter-attacking football. Marcus Rashford has been absolutely sensational. But Daniel James, I think, has been excellent as well, because one of the things that he does is he gives you the outlet on the other side. You've got Rashford, who's great at running with the ball. But James hugs a touchline over on the far side, and his unbelievable speed frightens everybody. Angelinho had an awful game against him on Saturday.
Yeah, he's done really well, Daniel James. Someone who I watched a lot last season at Swansea. And
do you know where he's from, where he was born?
I think he's born in Hull.
Oh.
I think.
Oh,
so he can't... Cumbrian are not going to be knocking on his door for switching on the Christmas lights.
Because
he's Welsh, isn't he?
I think he was actually at Hull as a youngster, and I think Swansea got him in as a youngster. But I mean, the improvement from him is incredible in a short space of time. And I kind of said it when he got the move to United as well. You know, people were saying, is it a good time to go to United? The dressing room's broken, you know, a young player going in. I actually said the opposite. I thought it was a good time because I felt he would go in and get a lot of game time and probably less pressure. I don't think there was no real expectation on United to win the league or, you know, hopefully maybe, you know, qualify for the Champions League. But I think as a young player going into that dressing room, then there's a bit less pressure on you. If United had won the league and there were world-class players all around you, you feel a bit, do I belong here? I'm not so sure. Would he get the game time? But
whereas
it's been the opposite.
Walks in, gone, this is what I can do.
I'm the main man almost.
And he just realised he's actually probably one of the better players.
Yeah. Holding his own, for sure. But
what are you going to do about Everton and their situation with the manager? Big Dunk, if he wins against Manchester United, the calls will be there from the crowd to give it to him. But is that a sensible thing to do?
No.
Ancelotti's available.
Well, I know, but would he go there? I mean, this is the thing. This is the problem, though, with the Premier League right now, is we've seen so many managerial sackings already in the first few months and a few more that could be coming, that there don't seem to be enough great managers to sort of then come in to replace those managers. Look, he's obviously had a great first game with them. If they did win again, obviously everyone will be absolutely thrilled. But that, you can't tell yet. It's too, look at what happened with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the start, you know?
Everton have won just one of their last 26 Premier League away matches against Manchester United. Manchester United on a cracking run of form. Right, City have been rumbled. Of all the tactical genii to have stumbled on the perfect formula to panic Pep, Steve Bruce and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer have done it. And less surprisingly, I suppose, Nuno Espirito Santo this season and Daniel Farke. They've developed a plan that is yielding results. Pin the fullbacks, commit men forward, counter-attack with pace. Is that the recipe to beat Manchester City, or has Guardiola and his team just got complacent?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things, really. You look in the summer, they didn't do too much business after having an amazing season, winning the title, of course. They didn't really bring anybody in. You could argue Liverpool didn't buy in as well, and look what they're doing. Mm. But I think the injuries, obviously Laporte hasn't helped. I think they have lost a little bit of that hunger and drive and edge, which is understandable a little bit. When you have a season that they did have last season, you are quite worried as a manager the following season then, because you know, you're looking at your players and saying, can we go again? Mm. Are you going to get a bit complacent? How do I freshen things up? Mm. How do I change things?
But they should have done that in the summer then, shouldn't they? I mean, I spoke to him recently and he said to me, you know, it's very difficult to win. You look back at the history of the Premier League, no one ever wins it three times. Well, not very often anyway. United have done that. But very few teams actually in the top flight of English football going back 120 years have ever done that. Yeah. And he's right. So it does beg the question, then, why didn't you put more money into it in the summer?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't really replace Kompany either. And then now with their injury problems, it's, you know, it was bound to happen, I guess, because they've got great squad depth. But to a certain point, when you're then missing a lot of your crucial defence, you're going to struggle. But something, it feels like a spark has kind of gone there a little bit. And I feel like Pep, he's being so cagey in all his press conferences with the media and something
stroke irritable.
Yeah, something. And it's kind of understandable because people keep nagging him and asking him about the title race. And I get it. But essentially, something has dropped off. Something isn't quite clicking right now.
He's getting outclassed tactically by managers as well, which...
Well, that's what I just mentioned. Yeah. Steve Bruce. Or they got a Solskjaer. Mm-hmm.
Unheard of.
That's not something you would have expected at the beginning of the season.
No,
is it?
Not at all from City.
But they don't look together as a team. You know, the goals they've conceded, obviously getting hit on the counter attack constantly. People talk about them defensively. That midfield's not right at the minute either.
It's basic numbers, though, Danny, isn't it? I mean, I see it with my own eyes, and I haven't done the counting this week, but I've done it a few times, watching them back on Match of the Day. You look at the goals that they concede, and the opposition just seem to have more numbers on the edge of their own penalty, on the edge of the Manchester City penalty area, than Manchester City.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that is a problem.
It looks like an organisational thing. The team don't look as if they're probably running as hard as they were. David Silva, I think, is obviously it's his last season. He's not been as influential this season. Rodri's come in and he's a very good player, don't get me wrong, but he's not Fernandinho in there. He makes those cute fouls and stops a lot of those counter attacks, but they haven't had him in there, and they just don't look organised at the minute, which is crazy, really, you know, a Pep Guardiola team.
Mm-hmm. Now Arsenal, who are their opponents?
Here we go.
This weekend.
The bit I look forward to.
I mean, they're not even Jekyll and Hyde, are they? They're Jekyll and Hyde and Hyde. I mean, they were—is Hyde the naughty one? I can't remember.
I can't remember.
They were useless Monday night for pretty much most of the game, apart from 9 minutes. We were bashing you in the WhatsApp group.
do you know what?
And I think I went to wash up and I came back and it was 3-1.
Right. So this is what happened.
And
this is so bad. But so I saw the West Ham goal, and I thought, do you know what? We were playing so badly. It was just, the first half was just awful, awful.
And it was.
And do you know what? Arsenal have been pretty bad for most of the season. And the past couple of years, something's been off. And we all know that. But this was really, really quite poor. So I actually turned it over for a bit, went on YouTube.
You didn't.
Came back. And it was, I think that's when it was 2-1. And I was like, what on earth has happened?
I'll tell you the truth. I didn't go into the washing up. What I did was, What I did was is I rang my mother.
Oh.
And she was also watching the game.
Okay.
And she said to me, "Oh, Arsenal, they're terrible, aren't they?" And I was like, "Yeah, they are actually, Mum. Well done."
Yeah.
And then as we were talking, well, it was only a short phone call.
Mm-hmm.
They'd scored 3 goals. And she started laughing. And she was going, "Oh, it's so nice for them, though, isn't it? It's nice."
Oh, no, they've had not such the sympathy.
They've had such a bad time, she said. It's good. It's good, isn't it? Yeah. Not obviously what you think if you're a Hammer, but definitely if you're an Arsenal fan, at least you've got 3 points on the board. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, 5-11 after 8-8. Does that say more about those that are around him? What is their problem at the moment, do you think?
Conceding too many goals for starters. Mm-hmm. I think it's 1.5 goals a game on average they're conceding. So we know that anyway about Arsenal defensively. They didn't sort those issues
awful.
At the start of the season. I look at them with the ball.
Okay, let's go back to that because we've been saying this for about 20 years. Arsenal's defence is rubbish. So who's the man to come in and sort that out? Because Freddie Ljungberg is not going to be the long-term manager, is he? I mean, because you know, this time they don't need an underwear model because some of the football's been pants.
If it was me, I'd be going for Nuno Espirito Santo from Wolves.
Okay.
I think he's an outstanding manager. Tactically, you look what he's done with that Wolves team. Difficult to beat, score goals. The recruitment there has been very good. I'm not saying he's been involved in all that himself because they've got a super agent, of course, but Arsenal have a similar kind of model done this. So I think he would fit in with that side of things perfectly. You look how he's kind of married that team together, players from the Championship stepping up and making them better, but then bringing in the likes of Neves,
Why would
Moutinho.
He leave Wolves and
exactly
go to
what
Arsenal.
I was just going to say. Agree. I think he's brilliant. Why would he go?
Well, Arsenal are a bigger club.
But
I think Wolves can challenge for Champions League probably in the next 4 or 5 years if they keep investing. But
and they will keep investing.
And they will investing, keep investing.
Which is what Arsenal aren't doing and won't do. And I read this morning John Cross of The Mirror, good friend of TalkSport, turning around and saying, you know, Arsenal have got a number of different options, but they've got very little money to spend. So they've got to go for a relatively cheap option who is not going to say, you need to buy me, blah, 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 and blah. So who do they go for?
But then it's just going to be a constant thing of you get someone else in, like Unai Emery, and it's just not going to be good enough. That's so pointless, saying, oh, well, we don't have the money, so we'll get someone.
I mean, I don't understand how they don't have the money.
Well, I mean, that's what baffles me as well. But, you know, if I'm Nuno, I get what you're saying. Arsenal is, of course, a bigger club. It is, than Wolves. But Arsenal right now is such a risk. As a manager, and as a manager where you're very successful right now and doing very well, I wouldn't go to Arsenal.
It's not a risk if you're Carlo Ancelotti, is it? Because you've just lost your job for no good reason at Naples. You are he's brilliant at managing upwards. Mm-hmm. He's fantastic at being the diplomat. He's a nice bloke. Everybody likes him. He speaks English. He plays relatively good football. Chelsea were magnificent when he was in charge. Somehow got the sack when he finished second in a shoe cupboard in Goodison Park. I don't understand. Never understood that. So he would be the perfect fit, I would have thought.
I had a season with Freddie at West Ham as a player, and I got to say, I mean, not that at that point I was thinking
about him. Is that where you got your style tips from?
Possibly. Possibly he is a cool guy, to be fair. Mm-hmm. But not that I was looking at that point thinking, oh, he's not going to be a manager, but just his persona and stuff, I never thought really. You know, I pictured him back in Sweden just sitting outside a coffee shop or whatever and just like just slowly spending his millions kind of, writing poetry or something. But and he kind of came after the game almost saying as if it was a tactical masterclass saying, oh, yeah, well, we waited for West Ham to get tired and that's when we won the game kind of thing. But
is that why you didn't run around for 45
minutes? Oh, do you know what I mean?
But for me, I don't think it's a risk taking the Arsenal job. They're in ninth position.
No. I don't think it's a risk. If you're a relatively good manager, you can go in there and sort
They've
that
out.
They've
got a good
no
squad.
Problem.
They've got a good squad of players.
But then leaving a club when you're doing very well—that's
a different question.
That's what I mean in regards to Nuno. I think that
he won't
is
leave
a
Wolves.
Risk.
There's no way
I don't
he'll
think
leave Wolves
so.
And go to
I think
Arsenal.
He is a man of loyalty as well.
Yeah.
You know, he strikes me as being that. So. I'll agree with you.
Arsenal have lost their last 4 Premier League meetings with Manchester City.
Of
the
course.
Last time they lost 5 consecutive top-flight matches against any side, all in one go, was against Manchester United between September 1983 and August 1985. Gunners not firing on all cylinders and looking for a new boss, but Liverpool are. We'll get to them in just a second because that's our game day match at 12:30 this weekend. They take on Watford. But first of all, Sheffield United, who will be looking to take advantage of any Arsenal slip. Don't snigger. They take on Aston Villa.
Sheffield United against Aston Villa. When Sheffield United and Aston Villa were promoted side by side last season, many pundits expected big spending Villa to be better equipped for life in the Premier League. A look at the table tells us the reality is very different, with the Blades sitting just 2 points off a European place and Villa languishing dangerously close to the relegation zone. United came from behind to end their four-match winless run away at the other top-flight new boys Norwich, and Chris Wilder will be confident of adding to Villa's woes. The absence of England defender Tyrone Mings is a body blow for the visitors, who come into the game on the back of their heaviest home defeat for the best part of 4 years at the hands of rampant Leicester. But in Jack Grealish, Villa do have a man in the form of his life and on a mission to force his way into England's Euro 2020 squad. So maybe all isn't lost for Dean Smith's men.
Salah in the snow, Van Dijk's double, an explosion on firework night. Watford's last three trips to Anfield have seen them lose 5-0, 5-0 and 6-1. Welcome back to the Premier League, Nigel Pearson. I mentioned at the top of the programme that I thought it was about as left field as you could possibly get. A guy who'd just been sacked from a Belgian mid-table team coming into to Watford. What's the thought process here?
We're all shaking our heads. I don't think we know, Sam.
Lucy?
Producer Lucy's just sitting in the corner thinking about the Christmas party. Like, Nigel who?
Your guess is as good as mine, Sam.
I thought it was quite random as well. We were actually here doing the Friday night show when it was announced, and we were all a bit baffled, really.
Did you think it was a typo?
Well, do you know what? I just didn't even really hear his name sort of floating about, really. So it came kind of out of nowhere. And it's such a big job again at Watford. But then again, because they're doing so badly, maybe
it can't get any worse.
Yeah, exactly.
But he does deserve a little bit of respect, actually, doesn't he? Because this is a guy that saved Leicester City in similar sort of circumstances. He managed to get them to win their last, they managed to, with 14 games of the season, they were finished, weren't they? Mm-hmm. And he managed to get them on this fantastic rise, which they continued, actually, and went on won the league the next year, which was amazing. And he has to take a little bit of the credit for that sort of form that they had. But how does he attack this match going against Liverpool at Anfield?
Just write it off.
I don't know, maybe put 15 players out there and up the ref doesn't. I really don't know. Listen, their season now, obviously they need points, but they'd just be looking near to just try and put in some sort of performance and come away confidence still intact. What confidence is actually left? I mean, you look at Liverpool, I think the last seven games against Watford, they scored 25 goals. Salah, five goals in four games against them. Mane, love scoring against them as well, 4-4. So it's about keeping the score down. He'll be looking for certain things. I don't think he'd be looking to go there and necessarily, obviously, try and win the game. It'll be about, let's have a look at my players. Let's see if they'll respond to me. Let's try a different system. Can we get the players understanding what I want? And I think the one thing with him as well, I think he strikes fear into players. He's got that switch as well. And I look at Watford, they've got so many. I think the dress room is a bit of a problem there. There's so many different characters and personalities. And, you know, Troy Deeney kind of holds that dress room together. He's the guy that disciplines everyone. He's the one that puts people into line and stuff. And Nigel Pearson is capable of doing that. I think previous managers maybe have not had that kind of fear factor about them. And I think the players need a bit of discipline as well. They've got a good squad of players there. Again, you look at that squad and think, I can get this team playing if we can get more organised and defensively better. Not scoring enough goals for the players that they have in those forward areas. So look, it's a difficult job to try and galvanise the players, but he is capable. You know, his CV will prove that.
One win in 16 league games all season. They ship goals against anyone half decent. Liverpool are 4 points better off than at the same stage last season, where they ended up finishing second, and they were second at this stage with 39 points after 15 games. Can anyone stop them?
I mean, certainly not Watford. I think it's no disrespect to Watford, but it's just not going to happen, is it? It is quite literally the top versus the bottom of the table. We all know Watford are just having an awful season. Liverpool are so good. And then when you're then having to go to Anfield as well, it's just... Do you know what? I'm really hoping that it's not an absolute killing because...
Well, it usually is between these
that's
two.
The only
thing I think might be slightly different is the Liverpool team might be different. They could rotate again because they've got the Club World Cup coming up, the quarterfinal of the EFL Cup on Tuesday night. So many games in such a short space of time.
Of course, I was just going to say that. But even when they play, you know, more of their squad players, they play their sort of weaker side, they're still very good.
Yeah.
They're still. We saw that against Everton, I think, that they played, you know,
a
weaker team. Yeah.
How embarrassing is that, by the way?
I know. Exactly. And they were good and they won and they scored some great goals. And, you know, that's the thing. They probably will be playing a weaker team, but that doesn't give Watford any more hope, in my opinion.
Thing with Liverpool is even when they're not very good, they still win as well.
Yeah.
Like, they're either great and they can put five on you, or most of the season they've just been finding a way. And that is a great trait to have. And I think the squad players in recent weeks have kind of surprised me a little bit. They've stepped up, you know, Alana's come in, the Ox is scoring goals. Mm-hmm. Naby Keita looks like the £50 million player in the last couple of games. That
scored again in midweek in the Champions League as well.
That's the only hope for Watford is they get Liverpool on an off day. They rotate the team off the back of the Champions League win or whatever. And they get them on an off day. And if you've got to try and get through those first 15, 20 minutes. If you concede early against Liverpool, then, you know, it's game over.
Liverpool are guaranteed to be top of the Premier League table at Christmas. Do you know the last three occasions of a team failing to win the title having been top at Christmas?
I'd say Arsenal or one of them.
Oh, yeah, probably.
The last three. 2008-09, 2013-14 and
2018-19.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
2008-09 was Liverpool.
Yeah, I was going to say Liverpool.
2013-14 was Liverpool.
And Liverpool.
And 2018-19?
Liverpool.
Right, to St Mary's, where Danny has been the Saints' saviour and the Hammers are panicking about Pellegrini.
It's Newcastle United 2, Southampton 1. Opportunity's goal, it really was. But from that build-up by Newcastle, do you know what? They might just sneak 3 points out of this game. It's Newcastle 2, Southampton 1.
West Ham 1, Arsenal 3 is out and finished. Arsenal back to winning ways, but West Ham and Pellegrini, the pressure intensifies ahead of the game at Southampton on Saturday. West Ham 1, Arsenal 3.
Of course, was not the result what he needed. We cannot win a game here in our home games. I think that are important points. Really difficult to understand how the team can change in 5 minutes.
Oh, Danny, how did West Ham allow that game on Monday night to slip through their fingers?
Because they're West Ham. It's as simple as that. For 60 minutes, I was sat there thinking, yeah, controlling the game.
Even then, though, they weren't very good. They weren't as bad as Arsenal.
They were slightly better. But, you know, that is West Ham for you. They can shoot themselves in the foot and the game can be gone within 5-10 minutes. You know, defensively, again, they're the worst team in the league for getting counter-attacked on. I've been saying this since Bilic's last season. They're so bad when they're actually attacking and they turn the ball over. Teams just murder them. One, because they're not organised. Two, there's a lack of mobility. Three, the system they play as well. You know, Manuel Pellegrini going with his 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1. I feel sorry for Declan Rice and Martin Noble at times because both very good players, not the most athletic and mobile. Declan's obviously a little bit quicker. But
they're
at times,
too much work.
Too much work. The spaces are too big to cover. You look at the first Arsenal goal Martinelli scored.
Is that because you've got Fornals, Allaire, Anderson, all spread out far too high up the pitch? No one gets back and helps out the defence. And you've got Rice and Noble basically trying to do two men's job each.
100%. At times just committing too many bodies forward. And, you know, Pellegrini does, he is an attacking kind of manager. You just look at the makeup of their team, the balance is wrong. You know, too many number 10s in there. Didn't sign a central midfielder. Got rid of Aubameyang in the summer. Got Wiltshire in, obviously, but you couldn't guarantee on him to play any number of games. They're short in there. They have to play those two all the time because they don't have any other options, really. Defensively, centre-back pairings changing all the time. There's no kind of continuity with the centre-backs. Full-backs change all the time. It's just, I can't see him surviving longer than the weekend.
Well, he'll get fired if he loses on Saturday, won't he?
Well, you'd think so, but I mean, I kind of thought it would maybe be game over when the Arsenal loss on Monday night. I kind of thought that might have been the one, but apparently not. I think the problem is going forward as well, you have good players. Well, West Ham, they have good players. That, you know, they spent quite a lot of money as well on some of these signings, but they're not getting the goals. They're not something. They don't seem to have like a proper goal scorer that is, you know, gonna push and really, really get those goals. And it's
They had Haller in it right at the beginning of the season. We're making packages here at TalkSport for our day coverage, saying that, you know, finally have they found their 20 goal a season striker for the first time since Tony Cotty or whatever. Yeah. But ultimately, the truth is that if you don't give a guy like that any service, it becomes disinterested very, very quickly.
100%. I think you look at Felipe Anderson as well. What has happened to this guy?
He's on a gap year, isn't he?
He's not scored at all, has he? And it's not all his fault, because I think part of it is the way West Ham play. Similar to Arsenal a little bit, they're quite methodical in possession. The tempo's slow. And if you look at Anderson, he's the guy with a real pace. He likes to play on a counter-attack. He likes to get in one-on-one situations. And he's never in and around the opposition's 18-yard box. He gets the ball. He's almost playing like a 10 at times, getting the ball in front of packed defences, and that's not his game. West Ham need more counter-attacking threat if they're going to utilise him, and that's partly why he's not playing well. But, I mean, Haller didn't even start, did he? Was it 40, 50 million? They're playing Antonio up front.
He's
Arsenal.
Their best player, isn't he?
He is.
He's got the impact, the energy, the aggression.
100%.
The problem is he can't, like a lot of them actually, can't last fit. 60, 70
minutes.
Well,
that's the thing. They're slow. No, like, they look, and just generally as a team, I think they just seem to lack that pace. Yeah. They do look a bit slow. Obviously, as well, Fabianski, we all know that's been a big problem for them, of course.
They've lost one of their 7 games in the Premier League this season with Fabianski starting in goal, and they've lost 7 of 9 with a Polish stopper not being between the net.
But I think we said on the pod last week that, I mean, he was making more saves than any other goalkeeper in the league, Fabianski. So there was still a problem there defensively. It's just that he was making a lot of saves. But they conceded 21 goals in the last 10 games. They've won 1 in 10 and conceded 21.
Coming up, the Dream Team picks with Romeo. First, the old romantic Sean Dyche himself meets the football purist from the northeast.
Burnley against Newcastle. The fans may still be reluctant to sing his name, but you can't argue with the job Steve Bruce is doing at Newcastle. Supporters reacted in uproar when Bruce became Mike Ashley's chosen one to replace their beloved Rafa Benitez. The bookies didn't expect Bruce to see out the first 6 weeks of the season, but 15 games in, and Newcastle are a massive 8 points ahead of where they were this time last year under the fable Benitez. If the informed Magpies can avoid defeat at Turf Moor, Bruce will also achieve something Benitez never did during his three-year reign at St James's Park by going 8 Premier League matches unbeaten. Burnley boss Sean Dyche will be expecting a reaction from his team to their dire display in the 5-0 thrashing at Tottenham. The Clarets are rapidly becoming the league's most unpredictable side, winning handsomely one week and getting battered the next. So which Burnley will we see this weekend?
Ah, it is the TalkSport Christmas party tonight. Nicole Holliday is here and she's been busting out her moves in the last few seconds.
You are so welcome, guys.
She's warming up. She's limbering up.
Yeah. Keep a good 3 or 4 foot around her. Those elbows are sharpened. Danny Gabaldon is here with me too. Which one are you going to offer to escort home, Romeo Butler? Just because you want them to get safe back to their abode, obviously, not for any other reason.
Well, I've not been invited. Crucially, not been invited.
Well, they've heard about your reputation.
to the party, so... Instead, I'm off down a street in East London singing carols with some mates.
Oh, okay, sorry.
It's incredibly wholesome. And
the first part of that sentence concerned me, I've got to be honest. I'm off down a street in East London.
Pulled me back.
Just about.
Sing some carols. Yeah.
It's a big Monday night fixture, Crystal Palace against Brighton, a massive grudge match. Crystal Palace lost this fixture last season, but haven't lost consecutive home league games against Brighton since December 1983. Who's going to inspire them to win?
Well, I mean, it should be another blood and thunder game. Their game against Watford at the weekend was a lively affair, if not high on scoring goals, obviously.
Or quality.
For that matter, indeed. And I have a feeling that this one may be low on quality as well. Crystal Palace... By the way, congratulations to Martin Kelly because he's actually overtaken Wilfried Zaha as the top point scorer in Dream Team this season.
Yeah. Wilfried Zaha last week, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Star man. Wilfried Zaha's just down on 48 points and Kelly's up to 55 points.
I actually think he's star man twice in 2 weeks. He was star man when they went down to 9 men or 10 men against... What was that when they went down to 10 men?
Two weeks ago.
It's Bournemouth, And he played... there and they kept killing the sheet and he got a star man that day as well.
So well done to him. He's Palace's top point scorer. And I don't know if he'll be leading from the back, but you know, it's hard to know where their points will be coming from. Zaha obviously turns it on against Brighton as well. He's the sort of player that gets
message Wilf that information. He will be absolutely...
He'll be fuming, I'm sure. I'm really sorry.
He will not be happy with that.
Can you do us a favour? Can you send him a text and tell him that piece of information? And what we'll do is next week on the programme, we'll read out his response.
I won't get one, I don't.
Neil Mopay has scored 6 Premier League goals this season, 3 times as many as any other Brighton player. Would you put him in your dream team?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hands down. He scored 13 points at the weekend, got a star man as well, 55 points in total, which is 20 points ahead of Dan Burn in second place for Brighton. He's been brilliant, actually, this season. His goal at the weekend against Wolves was fantastic. I'd be interested to know how Danny would have defended against a striker scoring with such a quick... It looked like it was kind of there on the outside of the box and then bang, it's in the net.
It was almost as if nobody expected him to shoot, really. Yeah. The defender kind of just slowed down. It's almost saying, you're going to control it. And it was a great strike, to be fair, but obviously with my pace, I would have got there and he wouldn't have had the chance.
Absolutely.
He scored against Arsenal, didn't he, as well?
He did, yeah. He's been great.
And we're just focusing on his major achievements, though.
So, I mean, if anyone's going to do it against Palace, I'd expect Mopay to do the business there.
Also this week, you're looking at Chelsea versus Bournemouth. Can you cherry pick any from Eddie's injury-plagued team, or is this all about to end in a 6th defeat in a row?
I think it might. I mean, Bournemouth are absolutely lost. You look across the pitch and, you know, players like Ryan Fraser this season has been brilliant the last couple of years, but only got 1 goal, 3 assists so far this campaign. Hasn't been that brilliant. Diego Rico has been a bit of a standout player for them, but Callum Wilson hasn't really got it going. It's hard. It's really hard to pick Bournemouth players. I do think that this will probably be a 6th defeat. Having said that, you know, Chelsea looked really soft against Everton and a bit shaky towards the end.
Well, they
concede
well. So many goals and yeah. they had another wobble, as you mentioned, in that game against Lille in midweek. And Harry Wilson is back this week because he was not available to play against his parent club. And he's Bournemouth's top scorer in the Premier League this season with 6 goals. 5 of those have come away from home. So it's got to be worth picking in a game like this where you know that Chelsea are going to concede.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's always worth getting in your team. He's only 1.5 million in the game, so if you're trying to save a bit of money around this Christmas period, then...
Other things to pay for.
Exactly. And
like cabs home, so you don't have to be walked by the Romeo.
He's a set-piece master, isn't he?
Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant. But, I mean, I'm not fearful for Bournemouth quite yet. But I think if this run of form does continue, especially over the busy Christmas period, then they could be in a bit of trouble. And it's the first time, actually, really, in the Premier League that Eddie Howe's been under this sort of pressure.
Same thing. They go through this little blip. They have like 8 games where they don't win a game. Then they go and win 7 of the next 10 or something ridiculous. It always happens.
But injury-wise, though, they've got
They have got serious injuries. Yeah. They've had some serious problems, yeah. And even up front as well, with Wilson limping out that game against Liverpool and
Josh King's a big miss.
Picking up an injury on international duty, which I know Eddie was absolutely furious about. Tammy Abraham, 13 goals now in all competitions.
Yeah, 132 points as well. I don't think any of us predicted at the start of the season that Tammy Abraham would be doing quite this well. He's been picked by 31% of teams as well, which kind of shows just how much faith that Dream Team players...
31% of teams. Yeah. So a third of all Dream Team players
have
Tammy in their team. Yeah.
Which I'm not impressive. Surprised.
Tammy.
It kind of shows just how much faith that Dream Team players have in him now as well. Because he would have started the season, I don't know the exact figure, but probably around about the 3-4% mark.
Nicole, have you interviewed him?
I haven't. Have you? No, have you?
Yes, I have. And it's one of those where you need to take a ladder with you.
Yeah, he's bigger,
so
isn't he?
Tall. Mm. He's absolutely huge and he keeps growing. Every time I speak to him, I have to take an extra block.
I need to look up his height because we discuss height on this podcast from time to time. And I'm 6'3", so maybe
you're not 6'3". He's not 6'3". He keeps walking in here saying he's 6'3". If you're 6 foot, you're wearing heels then if you're 6'3".
I'm 6'3", but as I often say, I'm terrible in the air as well. I've never learned how to head a football properly because
you don't need
I've never really
6'3".
6'3" and jumps 5'5".
Yeah. but Tammy Abraham's, you know, he's been brilliant. I think actually Chelsea at the back as well, worth a look. They've only kept one clean sheet in the last 11 games. But this is the one to target because Liverpool went 13 games without a clean sheet. Mm. Then they kept a clean sheet.
Rudiger's back. He's the main man.
Yep. He is indeed. Chelsea have lost 3 of their last 4 Premier League fixtures, though, so it's a bit of a concern for Frank Lampard, who just about got over the line on Tuesday night, although I must admit, I think it was quite nervy. Right, a Portuguese pair up in the Black Country.
Nuno Espirito Santo heralds Jose Mourinho for teaching him how to win when he played under the Tottenham manager at Porto. On Sunday, Nuno will be bidding to prove he is the Premier League's new special one by getting the better of his mentor and fellow Portuguese. Any fears Mourinho's Spurs revolution have reached the end of the road were extinguished emphatically with their resounding win at home to Burnley. But Jose will know this will be a much stiffer examination against a Wolves side enjoying their longest undefeated run in the top flight for 57 years. The fact they've managed to go 11 matches unbeaten while balancing the demands of the Europa League is nothing short of miraculous, and it's shaping up to be another excellent season at Molineux. Spurs, meanwhile, have got themselves within 6 points of the top four, and with Chelsea wobbling, Mourinho will be aiming to reduce that gap still further this weekend.
The fox in the box, Jamie Vardy, has scored in each of his last 8 Premier League games, just 3 short of his own competition record set in November 2015. The only other occasion of a player scoring in 9 consecutive games in the Premier League was Ruud van Nistelrooy. 10 in a row in August 2003, but Jamie obviously already has 11 on his name from 2015. He wants more. And Leicester are a sort of fox in the hen house, aren't they really? Because they are the only ones that can really stop Liverpool, and they can keep the pressure up on them over this congested period because, you know, they've got Everton, yes, they've got Manchester City before that game, which is a key fixture. But that big game on Boxing Day, the clash of the Titans, is going to be amazing, isn't it? And that's live on TalkSport, by the way.
I can't wait for that. I mean, do you know what? At the start of the season, it's not that I'd written Leicester off as kind of battling out for those top spots, but I didn't really think of them as being one of the contenders for, you know, those sort of first and second places in the Premier League. And they've been brilliant. Vardy is just on absolute fire at the moment. I think they've won, what, eight games in a row?
Club record eight in a row. But Brendan Rodgers has got to get some credit for that, hasn't
he? Oh, yeah. And do you know what I quite liked? Because obviously he's been linked to Arsenal a fair bit. And he was kind of asked about his contract. And he was a little bit, you know, he kind of said, I can't remember what he said, but he didn't shoot it down.
Give me a new one.
Well, yeah. And then obviously he's now
got
a
new one.
Exactly. It was so clever. But he's been absolutely brilliant. They are looking so great. So, so strong. And then coming up against Norwich, who are very,
the opposite
very
of so, so strong.
Exactly. Yeah. So, so weak. Norwich keep conceding goals. Ooh. Leicester keep scoring goals. When you're coming up against Jamie Vardy, it's not going to be a great game for Norwich by any means, is it?
It's going to be 9 successive goals for Vardy, guaranteed. Because Norwich just ship goals in for fun. Mm-hmm. One away win, I think it is, conceding over 2 a game. One win in 11 games. You can only see one win. The way Leicester are playing, unbeaten at home, Vardy banging it. Brendan Rodgers is an outstanding manager.
I remember at the beginning of the season, TalkSport having a debate about Norwich City and saying, you know, I think it was Adrian, I can't remember if it was. I'm guessing it probably was. Suggesting that if they play the way that they did in the Championship season, they would end up getting battered and it would be a disaster and they need to be better equipped for coming up into the division. And the local journalists in Norwich were very quick to jump on the bandwagon and say, that's ridiculous. Actually, the football that we play will be better suited to the Premier League. Well, Adrian, not for the first time, has actually been proved right. Mm-hmm. And they do look to me as if they probably either knew that coming up was going to be difficult and they'd just come here for the paycheck, go back and rebuild again. Not saying that necessarily was their plan, but knew that that was their fallback option. Or they were just completely underprepared.
Yeah, I think they were looking at it that way. They don't have the investment.
They overspent the last time they came up, didn't they? Yeah. And it crippled them financially and they had to be very careful about that.
So there's been a few teams that have tried to do that and survive. You know, Cardiff tried to do something similar last season. I'm sure they thought with their style of play, they think it would be suited to the Premier League and they'd be able to maybe survive just on that more than actually, you know, spending lots and lots of money. But the problem for Norwich has been they haven't beaten the teams around them. You know, I thought they would pick up some wins against the lesser sides playing the way they have, but they've lost a lot of games to teams around them as well. And so that's the worry, really. So credit to them in a way because they stick to their beliefs and they won't change for any team, which is commendable and nice to see.
But it's not
it's not working.
No, but it's going to cost them their Premier League status at the end of the day. But that just seems to be what they're thinking. You know, some managers would change and adapt and become more defensive and stuff, but it just seems as if that's going against all Daniel Farke's principles.
I don't understand why there is a need to be wedded to principles. Surely whole idea of being in a football division is to either stay in that football division or trying to win it. Ultimately, if you are just going to say, well, no, we just want to turn up and look pretty, but if we get beaten every single week, it doesn't matter. That's not sporting competition, is it? So all this sort of like sacrificing principles or, you know,
sacrifice them.
Just do it. You know, ultimately, you want to stay in the division. If they stay up by a point at the end of the season, then their coffers will be refilled even more. Mm. And I think the fans will be a lot happier than, you know, the idea of Marco Stieperman and Vrančić playing lovely little triangles in the middle of the park, won't they?
I don't know. You'll have to ask the fans because I speak to a lot of fans, you know, their team in the Championship, you know, Swansea, for instance, and they're having a much more enjoyable season this season in the Championship because they're winning more games. Young players are getting opportunities than when they were in the Premier League fighting down the bottom and scrapping for points. So I don't know. You'll have to ask a fan on that one.
Well, let's ask a fan who doesn't win anything. Can your team try to play pretty football? Nicole?
Wow, wow. I wondered where we were going there. I mean, I just think, like you're kind of saying, Sam, if it's not working, if you're conceding that many goals, surely you look at your team and you go, right, something needs to change here. We need to work on something. We need to adapt to being in the Premier League, to conceding this much. You can't. I feel like you can't just stick by your principles and try and carry on the way you're playing, because it's not working.
You do need to adapt. You know, Sheffield United have done that under Chris Wilder. You know,
and they look great.
Yeah.
Look how well they're doing.
Yeah, unbelievable. But he's made a little tweak in midfield where he played with a number 10 and two strikers last season. This season he's playing with a flat three because he realises we have to be a bit more together, a bit more compact. And that's worked for them. So there's the argument for that as well. So.
Okay, Norwich and Watford fighting it out for bottom spot at Christmas. I wonder whether or not those two are already down. Right, here we go. Yes, it's time for the commentator's curse. This week we will put the mockers on some poor individual or team with a statistical reason why they're bound to have a great weekend. But you know what happens with the commentator's curse. As soon as you start talking someone up, they fall flat on their face. Here is Danny Gabadon with his one. I mean, and also we've asked him, what's your commentator's curse this week? And he said, oh, no, I'm not telling you.
I know, what was that about?
Do you know what that is? That's called teasing. He's desperate.
Come on, then.
He's desperate to outdo Crook from last week, who came up with a very good one about vampires.
Yeah, I got my commentator's curse was wrong. So I said Rashford last week on commentator's curse, and obviously he scored. So I'm having a nightmare at the minute. But this week, I'm going to go with Joe Ellington.
Ooh.
Newcastle, as we know, away to Burnley. £40 million from Hoffenheim. 16 games, one goal.
Great return.
24 shots, only 6 on target. That's 25% shooting accuracy. His minutes per goal, 1,192.
That's rivaling yours.
Shots per game, 2. Shots per goal, 24. 0.21 goals per game. He has more yellow cards than goals.
God. Wait, hold on. And you're saying that he's going to score?
I'm not finished yet.
Nicole,
I'm saying he's not going to score, and he probably will now. Tackles, 10.
Right.
Block shots, 5. Clearances, 19. Headed clearances, 12. At this, I'm questioning whether he's actually a striker or not, because they're centre-half stats. And secondly, I'm questioning whether he's Brazilian with his stats. So there's no way anybody can tell me that he is going to score against Burnley on the weekend.
Going to score a blinder.
Oh, dear. That's killed
Beat
me.
That.
Well,
Nicole.
Okay, I feel like I'm clearly getting this a bit wrong then, the commentator's cast.
You can go either way.
Okay, yeah, because I'm going for Rashford because I do think that he is likely to score.
Yeah.
So he's obviously scored 2 goals against Spurs recently, got a goal in the Manchester derby, in great form, scoring goals. And, of course, United are playing against Everton, which, apart from potentially a fluky win last weekend, they're very poor at the moment, Everton. So, you know, Rashford, he's going to get a goal. He's had 10 Premier League goals so far, and he's definitely going to put one past Everton.
10 Premier League goals this season, which is the same number of goals that he scored in the entirety of last season. He's been very, great. Very impressive. I'm focusing on that match as well.
Ooh.
Everton going to Old Trafford this week. Now, when he was a swashbuckling striker, Big Dunk, the caretaker manager, scored more Premier League goals against Manchester United than he did against any other side.
Interesting.
7 goals in 16 games against them. And remember, at this time, it's not Manchester United of their current ilk scrapping around against the Champions League. This is Manchester United winning titles, doubles, trebles, Champions Leagues. This is Fergie. This is Giggs. This is Beckham. This is Butt. This is Scholes. Now, I've got a feeling that Big Dunk is going to cause a problem or two for Jolly Ollie at Manchester United this week, because, you know, that they haven't won 3 Premier League games in a row, Manchester United, under the Norwegian for nearly a year. And, let's be honest, Fergie winging at Old Trafford sounds a little bit familiar to me. What do we reckon?
Yeah, I quite like that.
Yeah, very good.
It's not as good as Danny's, but you know, we'll get there. Right, that's it from us. Game Day's got three Premier League games for you back-to-back on TalkSport and TalkSport 2 this weekend, including Liverpool against Watford to start us off, Chelsea against Bournemouth on 2, and then at 5:30, that big relegation clash between Southampton and West Ham United. All the matches as well are available around the world on Premier League Live. You can subscribe to this lovely masterpiece via Apple, Acast, Spotify and Google, and we will give you the gift of an audio piece of gold more often than Liverpool play football matches. And with about as much rotation of the key players as well. Liverpool, Laura Woods, Adrian Durham and Danny Kelly star over the weekend, and I'll see you next week.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.